You're listening to the Pocket Coven podcast,
where we explore the magical and mystical
and where they intersect with the wide world of mental health.
I'm Amber Lenore, a pagan creative arts therapist.
And I'm Callie Little, a pagan emotional support witch and artist.
We invite you to listen, connect, and deepen your relationship to magic.
And to yourself.
We're the coven in your pocket. Hello and welcome to another week of the Pocket Coven podcast. Amber here with a quick note prior to the episode beginning. You will notice there is some crackling noise, particularly with my audio, and I just want to apologize for that. We were remote recording with Zencaster for our very special guest who is not in our area. And our experience with Zencaster is that it's super convenient, it's well-priced, and it is also cursed. So, you hear a little bit of that curse in the episode. thank you so much for rolling with us as we are baby podcasters learning audio engineering every day. And if you happen to know of another third-party audio recording platform that would allow for us to record with remote guests who are in other areas, please hit us up and let us know, because the curse needs to be broken. With that, I hope you enjoyed the episode on the mother aspect. Hello, and welcome back to the show, Mint Fairy.
Thank you for welcoming me back. I'm glad to be here.
leaving room for Amber to talk, and listen, she's just like,
listen,
yeah, this is great.
Listen, all right, okay, first of all, it's fucking Tuesday. I'm in a robe, okay? I take days off on Tuesday. I just do therapy, cry, and wear robes. That's all I do, so my brain is not quite warmed up to the process yet.
I love it. We're here for every aspect of self. We're not about that perfectionist lifestyle.
I'm expressing myself non-verbally by nodding, which is unfortunate for a podcast.
It's fine.
You know, this podcast is an experience more than it is a piece of media.
Yes.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I am really excited, though, about our topic today, because we've wanted to get Mint back, of course, ever since the lucid dreaming episode, which, by the way, I mean, I said this earlier on Instagram, but that's our third most popular episode of the series so far.
Ooh la la! I love that. That's exciting. Lucid dreaming is such an interesting subject. I can't imagine that people aren't intrigued by it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with you, mama.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I guess people like me, but...
I like people too. I like that.
People fucking love you. Since we last had you on the show, you have gained 20,000 more YouTube subscribers. Did you know that?
Oh, really? No, because I don't look at it until I decide on like a goal. You know, I go, oh, maybe it would be fun to have this number, just because I enjoy seeing the number visually. You know, I think it's really nice to see that number. And I mean, I like when the channel grows, because I like when like-minded individuals find me. Like, that's the most exciting thing to me about being on the internet in general, is when people have similar ideas to me, or just similar quirks that I do, and we find each other. That's like finding your family, you know. That's the best thing about the number going up, is finding more family.
I mean, that's how you and I came into each other's lives. The internet is how all three of us have come into each other's lives.
Yeah.
Amber and I met on Fat Girl Tumblr.
Yeah.
And we bonded over actually birth work, which is kind of appropriate to bring up in this episode. And then I found you. We actually bonded over the loss of our mothers. So actually motherhood brought all three of us together, which is really interesting.
That is really interesting.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Wow, wow, wow.
Making meaning is magic.
Just a bunch of weirdos giving birth to themselves with other weirdos giving birth to themselves.
An Ouroboros of birth.
Yes.
Yes. Blech. Blech.
Well, I love it. Staying just like perfectly on brand. so today we wanted to talk about the mother aspect of the triple goddess. You know, we've talked about the maiden aspect and how it's actually a really underappreciated aspect of the triple goddess. The mother, I feel, is the one that we all see the most often celebrated. She's kind of like, you know, she's in the middle. She's just like the front woman for the group. And I think an interesting thing about our generation of witches is that we're not all necessarily women who belong to the title of mother.
Very true. Very true. There is so much more, I think, that that title can encompass, so much more that it can provide. You know, I think it's really beautiful that people are discovering themselves so much more in public on the internet and allowing that to permeate the lives of others so that they feel comfortable saying, you know, I'm a mother, I'm not a woman. I think that's something that's so amazing. Like, I'm so proud of people. We have so far to go. There's so far to go, but I'm so proud of people for coming into themselves and for realizing that these titles that we are so used to seeing given to women or given to men can be given to anyone, because we are all just, you know, aliens piloting bodies that we're borrowing for the time being while we're on Earth. So it's cool that we can recognize that and really celebrate that.
Yeah, I love that.
As you were talking, I was thinking that mother is a thing that you are. It's also a thing that you do. It's both. It's a noun and a verb. It's a thing you are. It's a thing that you do. And I want everyone to know how to mother. I mean, because aren't we talking about caregiving and nurturing?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something I want to ask each of you, maybe Amber, I would love for you to kick us off, because we just haven't heard your voice that much yet this episode, a whopping 6 minutes in. I would love for each of you to tell me how you as mothers would define the role of mother or the archetype.
That's so difficult. I feel like when I was younger, I had a very fixed understanding of what that was. I was very like period blood identified, very birth identified, very body identified. And that was fine and not useless. And also my role as a mother has transcended that. That was a very brief piece of my experience of motherhood, was this carnal, vaginal, breast milk, fluid part. The rest of it has nothing to do with it, actually.
Right.
You know, the rest of it is about loving my daughter, taking care of my daughter, relating to my daughter, understanding her, being there.
Yeah. I think that, you know, what you're talking about in that, like, the early 20s of your mothering experience, on the positive, we have the like celebrating, you know, uterine abundance and all of that like beautiful earth magic. But the shadow side of that is gender essentialism.
And exactly.
It's not that there's anything wrong with being like excited about your body and excited about what your anatomy is capable of. It's only ever a problem if that's how we define an archetype, a gender, because then we're excluding so many people. And, you know, I think our generation has seen a really huge shift from that. Like when you were talking about it, I was thinking like in a joking way, like my gender is a diva cup.
I mean, yeah. And it was for a long time. And then, and that was again, developmentally very important for me to master. That was also just me trying to really understand myself. And that was great. Yeah. And again, that was just such a limited portion of being a mother that once I had moved out of that phase, it was no longer sufficient to explain how I feel as a mother. Yeah. Has nothing to actually do with my gender or my vagina or any of that. It has so much to do with my heart. And I just want more of us to
connect with the ideas of motherhood, and we have to transcend gender essentialism in order to make that accessible for everybody so that we're all nurturing, so that we're all taking care of each other.
Wait, are you saying that there's a thing called toxic masculinity?
I mean, I've heard of it.
Mint, I want to know what you think, though. Like, what do you, how would you define mother as an archetype?
As a young mint sprig, a young leaf, I was quite frightened of the idea of being a mother. I was afraid of it. Because for me, my example of a mother when I was younger was difficult, you know. My mom was going through so much personally and in her marriage that it was just difficult for me to see my mother as something I wanted to be. It wasn't something I wanted to be. And like meeting friends' mothers, and even like just as a young Black kid in a town with no Black people or brown people or Asian people, no one, people's mothers became something that I was afraid of. And it was something that, you know, I had to prove myself to people's mothers in order to be able to hang out with their children. And I was confronted so many times with this angry mother, you know, this sneering mother, or this mother that didn't want me around their children because I was Black. So I had all these bizarre examples, you know, as a child, that made me feel like the mother was someone who made the rules about what everybody else was allowed to do, who they were allowed to talk to, who they were allowed to hang out with or play with, and someone who, you know, was very focused on themselves, just that also happened to be in your home. And of course, my mother and I, our relationship flourished when I moved out. And you know, my mom went through loads and loads of transformations and ended up being just like the most incredible person in the world. But as a child, you know, with those examples, I did not want to be a mother. I thought that I would be bitter. I thought I was going to grow bitter and angry. I thought that I would become, you know, some kind of warden, you know, and that wasn't what I wanted to be. And so I pledged myself to Artemis when I was like 10 or 11 years old. I want to be a maiden forever. I didn't want to take on that role. But as I got older and, you know, I got into my teens and I started having friends that were closer, and I met their mothers, and their mothers were nice, you know, and they loved their kids, and they loved me, and they wanted me to come over and stay over, and they invited me over when my friends weren't there, just to go over and hang out with my friends' parents and just hang out with their mom. Mm. I was like, this is different, and this is something I want. You know, when I got older and I met I kind of like rediscovered who my grandmother and my great grandmother were, and I realized that they were all, they all adopted children. My great grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother all adopted children. And that was something that I didn't understand until I was a lot older and realized that, okay, this person that, you know, birthed all the people that birthed me is someone who cares for so much more than just themselves and their family. And I was like, and that's something I definitely want to be. I want to be able to give someone a home when they don't have one. I want to give someone, you know, a place to be and a place to be loved and seen and recognized when they don't have that. I want to be everybody's mother. And once I felt that kind of feeling, and I felt like that the anger and bitterness that I had witnessed wasn't a part of being a mother, it's just a part of some people's lives, I was like, this is something that I want. And so to me, I think a mother is someone who can see outside of themselves and recognize that there are people that need nourishment and that they can give that nourishment. That they can, you can create for somebody a home. And that's what a mother is to me.
a mother is a safe harbor, a safe place. I literally kept my daughter safe inside my body, and then I kept her safe outside of my body, and now I'm a safe harbor she goes to. She's 18. Like, she doesn't need me to nourish her with my body or with my time in the same way, but she needs a warm place to land. And I did not forget to pull a card for this episode, and the one that I pulled was the Ace of Pentacles, right? Just that root system, that mother tree, right? Like, Mint, as you were describing your experiences, I was thinking about, oh, that shadow aspect, that reversed card of just, I don't have anything left to give. I've been picked clean, and I have felt that as a mother. And then when I'm in my exalted position, you know, in my elevated position, I am a mother tree. I send nourishment to the entire system of my home so that everybody is well cared for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
I love what both of you have said in response to the question, in response to each other. And Amber, like, of course, because we've both just read Circe, when you say, you know, you're a safe harbor for your daughter, I'm thinking like, yeah, you are both Aiaia and Circe. You know, you are this magical place where the maidens, the nymphs, get to go and be safe. And also you will ruin any man who dares to try some shit.
Yes. I will fuck someone up. I will fuck someone up. Like, someone once was lewd to my daughter at a bus stop, and my daughter stood behind me, and then she peered out from behind me and said, don't fuck with my mom. And I, like, walked forward. Oh, and I was like, do not talk to my daughter. Do not talk to my daughter. Yeah, absolutely. That fierceness is part of protecting the ones you love.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like both of you have had, you know, I mean, same as me, but you actually have had babies in your body and then mothered them. You've had a lot of different experiences of the concept of motherhood, you know, from growing up with a mom and being like, oh, a mom is this one thing. And it sounds like something we all have in common, and I'm wondering how universal it is as a child viewing the mother figure as an authoritarian. And obviously mothers are authoritarians in their young child's lives, but in the stronger sense of the word, you know, the slightly intimidating kind of prison guard like authoritarian. And I also see that each of you, it's interesting, I'm like seeing all these resonances between the way that you mother your kids. You know, Mint, your kiddo is what, 8?
7.
7. And Amber's daughter just turned 18. But I met Amber when Olivia was 9. And yeah, she was so tiny. And now she's like 6 feet tall. That's not exactly true, but it's basically true. She's huge. And I see that both of you have taken that early experience of seeing the mother as almost a scary figure to transforming it into being like, well, I am going to be a soft mother. I am going to be loving and give this child everything I didn't get to have.
Yeah, it's very true. It is very true. And I think that, I mean, we do that with every experience that we have, I feel like, especially as a child, you recognize the things, like when you do a lot of self-work, I mean, you do, when you're very self-aware, you recognize the things that helped to create who you are now. And you think about what things you could have avoided or what kinds of life experiences you could have had that were more positive if someone had been there to kind of tell you, well, you know, you don't have to do exactly what your example was. You can change things, you can do things differently, or, you know, this person is still they're your parent, but they're still kind of, you know, growing as a person as well. So it's okay that, you know, their response to you is like this, like what it is right now. Things will change for you, and you can make decisions based on your life experiences, and you can treat people, you know, as wonderfully as you will. you don't have to take this negative experience and turn it into another negative experience. And it really does help to, it just helps to pay attention to those traumatic experiences that you've had as a child and to understand them and to work through them and say, okay, I am not going to allow my child to have any of those kinds of experiences, as much as you can help.
Yeah. I was just about to say, like, I also know you're both human beings.
Right, right.
And, you know, even the softest, most loving, incredible, perfect Pinterest mom is going to have days where she just loses her shit.
Oh, so
definitely being a mother of any kind, whether that's like a metaphorical mother of a community or a mother of a child that you are caretaker of, like the definition is to be some kind of human for sure. And I think that one of the biggest struggles that so many moms face, you know, I say as an outsider, is the expectation of knowing everything and being on top of everything, being absolutely perfect, going to every PTA meeting and having your kid in a sport and in an art class and getting good grades. And also you need to have a career. Like, it is a really oppressive role in a lot of ways.
It is a very oppressive role in a lot of ways. And I'm not just speaking from my personal experience, but I've been professionally working with moms since 2004. Of all the things I've done, that is the thing I have done the most consistently for the longest amount of time. And, you know, I think also we become parents for all sorts of reasons. I became a mom when I was barely 20 because I was in part trying to rewrite the story of my own childhood. I was obsessed with the idea of nurturing and pregnancy and birth and parenting. And I learned about how to be a good mom. And that was really important to me. And I taught childbirth ed classes and I went to all the support groups. And I did all the thing because I had never had a mother. So that idea was so exciting to me. And the way that I knew how to access that was by having a child. And that was great. That was so smart of me to do. It's now only at the gate of 40 years old that I'm actually able to give some of that back to myself. I didn't know that I needed to give any of that to myself. That wasn't clear to me. And I noticed that in working with mothers, being a mother under capitalism is fucking dehumanizing. It is extremely difficult to enjoy being a parent because we all have to make money. We all have to navigate the crises of our lives. And I think some of the most deep trauma work I do with the mothers I work with is reconciling the times they have passed their trauma over. You know, some of the times that I have been shitty with my daughter, those were times that I've had to heal from and that she's had to heal from, and we've had to do that together. And that's also a process in motherhood, you know, that we're rupturing and repairing together. And that's very difficult to do because you really have to be okay with being someone who fucks up. And There's not a lot of room in our culture for that to be true of mothers. Fathers, we almost expect to leave. Mothers, are you kidding? Oh my God, you can't leave. I left Olivia for about 9 months, and Callie sent me this book written by a woman who had also decided not to be a mom for a spell of her life. And it was exactly what I needed to let the other parent be in charge, and one of the most excruciatingly shameful things I ever did, because I was really pushing against that. I was like, no, I need some space. I'm like not doing well. And so breaking the archetype, yeah, it's a challenge, and it's also absolutely necessary.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I agree with that so much because it's true. People forget that mothers are people. They really do. They forget that mothers are people with their own interests and their own goals and their own entire personalities. You know, you lose your name. You know, you're no longer your name. You are mom. You are mommy. You are so-and-so's mom. You know, you lose your identity sometimes. And in order for you to show your child what kind of person they can be, you have to be that person for yourself as well. You can't just melt into this like mom candle, you know?
And that book is called Know the Mystery by Mary Scott Daughtry. And it was written by my friend Maggie's grandmother, who passed away a couple of years ago. But it came into my life in a time when, you know, I was just discovering birth work. And that is also how, you know, you and I connected. And in one of our first two phone calls, maybe our very first one, I was like, you have to have this book, Amber. And that's how the book came into your life. Just that esoteric current of, I don't know, maybe sovereignty and motherhood, you know, unshackling the concept of mother. It's so strongly tied to the concept of womanhood. And, you know, that has its own shit with it. But we don't have to have motherhood and womanhood be in the same, I don't know, infinity sign. You know, they're not an Ouroboros. Mint, I know that, like me, you are comfortable with the she, her, and the they, them pronouns. As a non-binary person, have you found that show up in your motherhood?
I don't think so. You know, maybe it has, and I have not noticed. Perhaps it has been a part of the cycle, and I have not noticed. I think just because of the way that my brain works,
yeah,
I definitely think of things like mother, father. All of these are titles to me that can be taken on by anyone.
Yeah.
And they don't really, and not like in a way like, oh, they're just titles, anyone can do, but like my, but that's how I see them. That's how I always have seen them. You know, I even as a child, I've just seen these roles that can be filled by people who have those types of personalities or those types of goals. Like I have the goal of nurturing someone in this way, or I have the goal of being the leader of the land. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a title that can be used. So yeah, I definitely see mother as like a job with a little, like a classified ad, and you filled it. I can do that. So I guess I will do that. I check those boxes. I will be the right one that does the this, you know? So,
right. Like anybody can learn how to be a doctor. Anybody can learn how to be a mother or a father. We can even be those things for ourselves. I think the majority of witches do become that for ourselves. You know, that inner child work is so integral to our progression as spiritual beings, or even just as people, which like same, right?
I mean, I was going to say reparenting is like, it's so rough. I mean, raising a child of my body. Yeah. A whole thing. Raising all the children inside of my body, full-time job, like never ending, constant, very, very tiresome.
I'm a mother of infinite children. They're all me, and they live inside my brain.
And they're all screaming. They're screaming.
Absolutely.
They want Doritos.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Mother of all, you know, the mother of all. Imagine what it was like before all of the organized religions and all of these, like, you know, little pockets of societies that created this patriarchal, you know, archetype. When before all of that, when humans did worship the mother before anything.
When the mother archetype and the war archetype were like same and mushed together, I've seen videos about how they've been separated, how every goddess became like a love goddess when it used to be, you know, sex and death, all of it together, life and death. And it's been separated, and we're just supposed to be these infinite life givers. And I find being a mother to be quite dark and full of weird grief all the time.
Yes.
All the time, because this baby you love like just doesn't exist anymore. All of a sudden, it's this constantly shedding being that is just always changing, and you're watching it morph into what it's going to be. And it's like,
Okay, well, I'm sad about that and happy. Yeah. I don't know. It's so confusing to be a mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you're always falling in love with this new kid, but that kid is a stranger to you all the time. And then always grieving the baby and the toddler and the child and the preteen and the teenager, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's less grieving of the teenager if we want to be cliche about it. Like, you know, I also know that teenagers are really fucking cool. I love teenagers.
Yeah. You know, I love that it's euphoria high at my house all the time. I'm really into it. I'm into it. It's great. They're always wearing crop tops and they're always stoned.
I cannot with euphoria. It's too upsetting. It's so dramatic.
I haven't seen season two at all. I watched season one and I watched it like with tissues and like holding my laptop because it was very, I mean, if you've had any kind of experience ever in your life, it's going to be shocking to you. It's going to be reminiscent of something you've gone through. Like I'm watching it and it's just, man, it's like putting me in all these like, you know, explosions. Like it's good though. It's so good, but man, it's hard to watch.
Yeah, but I think that one of the reasons it is so reactive for us to watch it now is because we aren't in that maiden phase anymore. We're not at fucking euphoria high. You know, we are watching it from that mother stage of life. Like whether or not I have a kid, that's the spot of my life I'm in. And you see it and you're like, oh my God, I feel for these kids. I want to help these kids. And it's wild to be looking at them and you're like, you look 12 years old. I also know you're 30, but you look like a baby and you're portraying a baby. And I'm very uncomfortable with how sexualized you're being right now.
Oh gosh. Don't even get me started on that, Riverdale.
we're very pro sex. Like, yes, actors, actresses, shows, kids, enjoy your sexuality. The part that I'm like, huh, is the mass commodification of child sexuality.
Yes.
That is so present. And I'm not saying don't watch Euphoria. It is a beautifully written, beautifully shot, incredibly acted series. But just, you know, for the perspective of why I think it's so upsetting to watch is like, we know better now. And when you're a kid, you're going through that. You're not looking at it with like love and care and wisdom for, you know, what's best for you. You're like, I want the most experiences possible. I want this buffet of life choices. And I'm just going to gobble them down and see what the fuck happens.
And also, I just want you to wear a sweater. I just want you to put a sweater on and be warm.
Oh, it's cold outside. Please. It's winter time.
Please cover your midriff. Please
cover your beautiful hip dips. You get cold. You're going to have cramps, such bad cramps with your hips out like that. In the 40-degree weather.
Truly. And they're also skinny. They don't have any insulation, you know?
Insulation. They need some. They need, like, just warmth and hugs.
Somebody send that crew a bunch of real cute, aesthetic, chunky Snuggies. Sweaters.
Dear Euphoria kids, I know that you're adults, but can I be your mom? Would you like a cardigan?
Yeah.
What, seriously. You know, what that makes me think of that you said that, like, can I be your mom, is this phrase that my friend Lola Pickett, who is a wonderful spiritual teacher, she uses, and I feel like it's something like the untethered or like the wild rebel empath, which is somebody who's like, I feel everybody's feelings all the time and I'm taking charge of this and I'm in control of it. Like that doesn't really work. So there is that mothering feeling that comes up, I think, for everybody, where you're like, I know better than you. I could tell you what to do and your life would be so much easier. You know, that controlling aspect, the smother aspect. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it comes up a lot also having real babies that are made of your cells and stuff. I don't know. What do you think that is a reflection of? How do we contain that part of ourselves just as people, not even necessarily as biological parents or any kind of parent?
Well, I mean, I really think it's important what you're saying about that that kind of archetype can be embodied by anybody. Mm-hmm. Anybody can be embittered in their caregiving or in their nurturing, or they can do it reactively or from a place of stress or from a place of trying to control their own anxiety by controlling other people. To be truly receptive is, you know, part of embodying motherhood, I think. And allowing people to, you know, really be who they are. That's really what safety is, right? Like if you're trying to control what people are doing, that's not a super safe thing to do. They won't feel safe or seen or heard in that. You know, what it is, I think it's an inability to know how to do that for ourselves. You know, the more that I know how to take care of myself, especially the parts I don't like, the easier being a mom has been. Mm-hmm. Much easier.
I think that it probably also reflects, you know, not really having boundaries for ourselves. Like you were saying, I think it's very much attached to exactly what you said, Amber. When we don't have a cutoff point for ourselves, when we're not aware of our needs, we can see other people's lives playing out and we're like, oh, that's going to go wrong. And then I have to be there to help you. I have to deal with the fallout of your choices. But if we have solid boundaries, you know, not overly rigid, but reasonably stable boundaries, then we don't have to be afraid of other people fucking up their own lives. You know, we can accept that that's part of our job as people. And I say this as somebody who's constantly working on that in myself. Like, I love to tell people what to do. It's why I took up coaching. And also, you know, my therapist was telling me once, like, you got to give up this idea that you can like fix people. And that made a big difference because I trust my therapist and I'm not offended when they say it. I'd be offended if anybody else said it. So don't at me. But it is a desire to control our own situation through other people, which is very codependent.
Yeah, I recognize that. I recognize that from a perspective of being someone whose mother tried to steer them in the direction that they thought was a better direction than the one they went in. And like watching other people do the same thing and trying to, you know, tell someone, oh, I did the same thing. I went through that. Don't do that. Don't be like me. Don't do what I did. You know, do this other thing. And it comes from a place of like wanting to see someone, you know, succeed and be happy, but also trying to fix that experience in yourself, you know. And I really like the idea of being there for someone, knowing that they're going to make their own decisions and their own mistakes and stuff like that, and maybe giving them advice, but just allowing them to live their life and just, you know, kind of walking alongside them, you know, and just giving them room and giving them your time, but just also being like, you do it though. Like, this happened to me and this is what I did, but you do what you do. Do what feels best for you. And I'll just be here, you know, to high five you and to give you a hug when you need it. Because we can't decide for other people, you know. We have to understand that our experiences were our own and they may have gone in a way that we didn't enjoy, but other people are going to do things the way that they want to, and being there for them is a privilege, I feel like. You know, being there for someone during their battles is, it's special. It's a different type of mothering, you know. It's kind of like hands off, but I'm here. But hands off, though, I'm gonna let you do your thing, you know.
Yeah, it's like channeling the Empress instead of the High Priestess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we gotta be the High Priestess sometimes, you know. She's a badass. She knows what the fuck she's doing. She knows her skills and her talents, and she knows shit we don't. But the Empress, she's just like there to give you hugs and maybe a loaf of bread and accept gifts from villagers. You know, she's soft. Those rigid parts of us need that gentleness, you know. And I think it is definitely self-love to be gentle with those rigid feelings that come up. Like, they are proof that we have some bruising. So we don't need to punch our inner selves and be like, you're an asshole. Stop it. Stop being so controlling, you know? we do have to mother ourselves in that way. We have to be really nurturing and gentle and say like, hey, I'm seeing that, you know, this is coming up for you. Maybe what we need is to remove ourselves from this situation. Maybe we need to not worry so much about our friends' dating lives, but our own, you know?
Well, yeah, because I mean, yes, I agree that that energy comes through me as a mother, but not as strong as it comes through as just part of my child self. It's actually a child part that wants other people to be happy, and it wants to control what they're doing, and it's really concerned with the choices they're making, and it wants them to be okay, because if they're okay, then maybe I'll be okay. As a mother, like when that archetype is coming through me, I'm not a very controlling mother, actually. It's younger parts that are really worried, but we'll like dress up as a mother and tell you what to do. But don't be fooled. It's three toddlers in a trench coat. Like those bitches are not, they're just trying to meddle, you know? And so, you know, as I've gotten older, I just kind of don't take it on, because in part for my own self-care, if I am so concerned, like as a therapist, with the choices that my clients are making and feeling like I need them to do something different, I am not enjoying my job. And it's honestly not an appropriate boundary. I don't get to say what they do outside of our sessions. I am there to help them process their feelings. And that tells me that I'm getting activated by their problems. And that's probably my shit. So I'm going to deal with my shit outside of their time that they pay for. The baby doesn't drive.
Yes, the baby does not drive, even when it really, really wants to. And sometimes you turn your head for 1 second and then you're like, fuck, the baby's driving. You know, it's okay. Just put that baby back in its seat. You just get back in that driver's seat. Nobody saw it. It's fine. Or maybe they did, and then you own it and you move forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how does this archetype show up in our magical practices? You know, what can we look at in the form of mothering and being a witch? Like, I have some ideas, but I'm curious if either of you have some thoughts on that.
I mean, I have a million thoughts on that. it's our manifestation, you know, it's our boiling pot. It's our cauldron full of goals and wonder and mystical, magical decisions, you know? So whenever the moon is full, that's when the mother is like holding you and like asking you, she's like Santa, asking you what you want. And you're cooking up this beautiful brew, this gorgeous stew of decisions that you want to become a reality. And whenever I'm working in that sort of way, whether I'm calling on a mother goddess or not, I always think about what I want to be birthed. You know, what do I want to be alive? What do I want to bring into this world? What reality do I want to create? And that's like the backbone for every full moon ritual, always. It's like, okay, what do I get to create this time? Like, you see the moon and she's like huge and shining in the sky, and it just excites me. What do I want to create, or what do I want to perpetuate? What do I want to continue to grow? And that's like the biggest thing about the mother, I think, that I carry with me every month. It's that birth of the thing. The birth of the thing. Dr. Frankenstein, and I'm like, what do I want to create with this beautiful moon today? Anything.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love the idea of the full moon being this like loving mother stirring up a cauldron of the, you know, elixir. That's what you need. And my brain immediately is like, okay, so what's the new moon? And I feel like for that metaphor, it's the day that the mother's doing her housekeeping. You know, she's shaking out the rugs. She's washing her clothes. She's getting rid of all of the mail that's piled up on the table. Like, it's about clearing shit out, right? Do you agree with this metaphor, Mint?
Yes, I do agree with the new moon being, you know, the restart. It's the beginning. It's the seed being planted before the flower blooms, you know. So you have to clear out your space and you clear out your you empty out the pot, you know, and you clean it up, make it nice and fresh and ready for what's going to go into it on the full moon. So yeah, the new moon is like scraping everything clean and making space for what you want to bring into it. Cleaning out the garage so you can get a new car, sort of thing.
The spring clean. Amber, what do you think about motherhood and magic?
Yeah. Well, I was, yeah, percolating on that while I was listening to you talk. And I feel like when I am doing magic, for lack of better words, when I'm being magical, I'm playing mostly. I'm loafing around on the beach and I'm seeing what I can find. And then I'm looking up the correspondences and I'm thinking then about how that gives me messages for the future. And then what about my past self and my future self? And they're doing this. And then I'm doing like creative imagination around the shells. Like it's like a whole fucking thing. Like, you know, like that's why I love to be alone. I've always been like that. I'm just like, I want to be in my own little world. And when I'm doing that, child self is there. Mother is there. Like she needs to rest. So she loves just like, oh, a slow walk on the beach. Fuck yeah. And then my crone self is also there, you know, gleaming the wisdom because it's kind of an old thing to do, like an old lady thing to do, to just walk on the beach and think, you know? And so I feel like all of them get to play together. And so to me, it's just a lot of alignment. I would not bring myself to magical practice if I didn't care about my need to play. And I gotta access the mothering part of myself to take my ass down into my little space and do it, to bring myself to the threshold so I can play in it. The mother gets me there. She's the one who packs the bag and makes sure that I took a pee. And do we have all the things we need? Are you feeling okay? Okay, you're anxious. Take a little more time. Mm.
I love that. I love how gentle your approach to self-care is. And I know that it hasn't always been that way. You took that inner mother to like anger management, not literally, and you take her to therapy and you take your inner child to therapy and like the crone that we all become, regardless of gender, again, because these are just archetypes, the crone that we become is with us our whole lives because that's how she gains her wisdom. So even though we are always the child because that's how we start, and we're always the mother because it is either what we are moving toward or moving away from, we are always also the crone. You know, the triple goddess is symbolic of all of the stages of life that are always present within us. And mother is an archetype that is always present within us, same as father, child, you know, wise one, all of them. We've talked about in the past that we do a lot of, you know, reparenting ourselves together and reparenting each other and a lot of play. Like we are our most child selves, either by ourselves or around each other, because we're fortunate enough to have found this like weird family connection in the wild, you know. But I think so much of like new age work, spiritual work, whatever the fuck it is that's going on, occultism, witchcraft for us, I think so much of it is about accessing that inner mother. You know, I think of the willpower it takes me to be like, okay, I haven't tended the altar in a while. I gotta go deal with it. I gotta clean it up. And I do that because I know it's good for me. I know I will enjoy it. I don't really feel like I'm going to enjoy it, but I go there and I do that caregiving to this object of my spirituality. And that time that I spend on it is nurturing back to me. So I think of my spiritual practice as a mother relationship to me. It's like this very abstract relationship, but it's also so tangible, you know? One thing that I think is just worth noting, you know, another thing the three of us have in common is all of us have lost our mothers in recent years. Mine, the furthest back about 6 years ago, Mint, I know yours just a year and a half ago or so.
Yeah.
And Amber just this past fall. So, you know, we also have this awareness of the complex relationship of the mother and like losing the literal mother figure. And I think it gives us a really different perspective than before. What do you two think?
Yeah, definitely. I think that just like whenever you lose anyone, you think about all of the positive ways that they've affected your life. You think about the most beautiful things that you've learned from them or that you can, you know, draw upon. But you really recognize how many stages they've gone through in their life. And you attribute that to personal growth and the growth of just being a human on earth. And I don't know, it's remarkable. I think it's remarkable to have been able to experience someone at a young age through so many different stages of their life and so many stages of your life. And then at the end of their life, it's just an incredible journey to be a part of and to learn from. And it gives you hope for yourself. You know, it gives you hope and it gives you a desire to live more and to love more. I don't know. Like for me, this is from my experience, it makes me feel like I want to be more like my mother in ways that I never thought I would have, you know, not just that I want to be more loving or I want to adopt children. You know, those are things that I definitely want, but I want to be able to change. I love that she was so able to change and so willing to change. And that was something, there are just so many things that I never really recognized until her passing, you know, and so many things that I learned from all of those stages of her life, like being there through all those stages in her life. But definitely like this, just the willingness and the ability to change and to evolve at any stage of life, to me, is just, that's one of the biggest lessons that I've learned and something that I will carry with me forever. And that I try to tell people, I talk to my clients about it, I talk to my friends about it, I talk to other family about it. You can always, always change. Every next moment, like any new day, is a chance for you to say, okay, I'm done with this. I'm doing this now. You know, I want to become this. I'm starting this now. You can just let go of any other crap that you don't want to hold on to anymore and grab onto something new. You just always have that chance. As long as you're alive, you always have that possibility. And it's just that's something that I think is really important to remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that everything both of you just said is, I mean, full circle. I think that's the definition of motherhood. It's really fucking complex. It's very multifaceted, and it has a lot of different faces, you know. Mothers can be wise women. They can be really wild, chaotic fire beings. They can be depressed, quiet hermits. And they're probably all those things, you know, and a whole lot more, because as human beings, we're not just one thing. We are not one archetype. The hero's journey has a lot of fucking cards in it, you know? And mothers are just one part of that. They're not the theme for the story. They're one piece. And I think that this like very appreciated aspect of the triple goddess is appreciated not for the wrong reasons, but not fully appreciated for all of the right reasons. You know what I mean? Great. You're both nodding. Perfect for a podcast.
You know, it works great when I'm in role as a therapist, because I'm just like, yes.
I know, because I can see you. So I just keep going like, yeah, no, I want you to know like that I agree. But I don't know if you're going to talk again. So I'm just like.
I'm doing a full empathetic nod. Excuse me.
Yeah. Yes. I'm trying to allow you to talk. I'm not trying to control your speech.
Thank you so much.
We're mothering you,
Kelly. Yours, obviously. So maybe I need to work on that. Just kidding. This is what producing a podcast is. So
yeah.
Now that we have discussed a little bit of death, you know, just a sprinkling of our, some of our greatest griefs.
As a treat.
Yeah.
We will be on the extension of this episode for our patrons. We will be telling birth stories. So both Mint and Amber will be telling the stories of giving birth to their babies. And I will be telling the story of being a birth doula for the very first time. So you can get those stories over on Patreon. I did want to share some news with the collective really quick before we get into like plugging all of Mint's amazing shit. We are now listened to in 70 countries.
What? I didn't even know there were 70 countries.
That's so amazing.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
I also, after seeing that, I was like, how many countries are there?
That's and nuts. It's
I know
so
a
cool.
lot about like five topics. Geography, I don't know. I'm also an American, so cool. We generally don't know that. But yeah.
So true.
Amazing.
Thank you for celebrating with us, Mint.
That's amazing. Yes, absolutely.
Where can people find all of your amazing media, crafts, work?
Okay. Yeah. All right. You can find me at Mintfairy, at MintFaery on Instagram, as well as Twitter, but I don't tweet often. You can also find me on YouTube. And the name there is just Mint Fairy. And what else do I use nowadays?
Etsy.
I always forget. It's mintcoven.etsy.com. Mint Coven. MintCoven.
And listen, folks, I have been harassing Mint about upping their prices because they undercharge. So here's what I'm saying is if you want that good deal, hop on it because – as we speak, I am bullying them into raising their prices because they're worth it. But you know what? Don't miss a good deal.
Thank you.
Yes. You're spectacular. And like your intuition, you've made me custom tea blends and body oils that smells so good. And also y'all, the packaging is so fucking cute.
Oh my God. It's I love so that handmade packaging. Mm.
It's so good. So please go become one of the jillion YouTube subscribers for beautiful Mint. Look at their gorgeous face, all their cute outfits. Listen to the, I love when you do the like the tea corner, Mint tea. It's so cute.
I know. I have so many Mint teas ready, like brewing. They're all brewing.
I love it. And actually people who listen to this, I am in an episode of Mint's show.
Yes, that is so true. It's such a great episode. People love it. It's so nice getting to chat with you about sex magic, and people are really, really loving just the conversation back and forth. So yeah, more to come.
Yeah, more to come. Anything else from our end, Amber?
A couple things. One, if you're on Patreon, we will have a new episode of Self as Myth that is a creative journey up the side of a mountain to visit with Marina Sabina. It is my whole journey up there. And that it's about 20 minutes long. I'm still editing it. So that'll be available at the book tier, I believe. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Update on the book aspect of our little Patreon coven is we are making the next episodes of Self as Myth from here on out exclusive to that tier. Because as we're figuring it out, and we are going to be talking about psychedelic reading because y'all are so into it and so are we, you can also get this bonus podcast, beautifully told stories. So far, it's only Amber, so I'm not even being self-congratulating by saying that. But they're full of like all kinds of atmospheric sound. They're so enjoyable. And you can really just like brew yourself a cup of magical tea and sit down and get cozy and listen to this wise woman tell you tales from beyond the veil, you know? You know what? Just today, I got a DM on my personal Instagram from Esther, who said, first off, thank you for everything you do. Finding the Pocket Coven has helped me feel seen and understood in an extremely refreshing and empowering way I've never experienced before. In any case, I just wanted to extend my gratitude to you and Amber for everything you do.
Just a
nice little short and sweet little bit of niceness. So thank you, Esther. Yeah. We love getting your feedback. We love when you leave reviews because we truly do read all of them. It feels like a warm hug. Also helps the algorithm. So please, if you have not yet left us a rating and review, go hit those 5 stars. You know, if you don't think it's 5 stars, send us a DM. Let us fix this. Let us make this a 5-star experience for you. And before this last little something special for y'all, I do want to say a very quick thank you to our 2 goddess tier patrons. These folks give us more money than anybody every month. So thank you, Carly. And thank you, A Witch and a Woodman LLC. They our cute little business. Go check them out. They just opened. This is the only time I'm going to say that plug in particular, but you know what? They take care of us, so we take care of them. And if you want to become a goddess tier patron and get your name said in every single episode, you can join us on Patreon. It's $50 a month, which for some of us is a lot. For me, I can't do that, but maybe you are a true patron of the arts and have that cash in your pocket. We would love to see you join us. Anyway, we do have a special treat for you this week. Listen in past the end of the episode because we're bringing you a brand new song from our friend Rowan Rain, who we have yet to have on the podcast, but will be on the podcast. And Rowan has created this beautiful new single called The Witness. And it is through Spirit House Records. I gave it a listen before the show, and I immediately asked if we could play it. Rowan was generous enough to let us play it on the pod. So please stick around, enjoy. And if you like this music, follow Rowan at Selkie Seer on Instagram.
This world is sinking into something deeper than a distance.